All right, guys, welcome to Devin Gets Red Pilled, episode 62, June 12th, 2021. It's about 10 a.m. West Coast time. Just hanging out. Looks like it's going to be a nice day here in Oregon. It's been cold and rainy all week. So Deborah is not here yet. I don't know where she's at. Let's start doing some business. So we're supposed to have two local hip hop artists on today to discuss hip hop conspiracies. Hold on, let me pause. Deborah just sent me a text saying she doesn't have the link. All right, we're back. Sorry, guys. It's not the best way to start out. Deborah says she didn't get the invite from me for the Zoom meeting, but I just resent it. So hopefully she'll be rejoining us. Joining us. There she is. She still hasn't changed her computer settings, and it says my wife's name when she comes in. So change your name. Okay. Change it to gallery view. There you are.
Here you are.
Change your name. I'm recording already. I'm going to change
your name. Did you send the email before I texted you?
Yes, I did, but maybe it didn't go through.
Sometimes. I didn't receive it.
Okay. Well, I just got into it, and we're putting out some terrible content right now because I paused. I haven't said anything yet, and I've been talking for about 3 minutes. So, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good. Looks like it's going to be sunny out. Uh-huh. My ear really hurts with these headphones on, so I might.
Why?
I don't know. I have really bad cauliflower ears, you know.
Yeah.
And last, like over a year ago, jiu-jitsu, one of them got cut, and it's just like a little cut, not a big deal, and it hasn't healed yet. It's been over a year.
That's not right.
And they don't get like blood flow through them, you know, they're like dead.
Uh-huh.
So it won't heal. And like, it's like turned into a big bruise now. I hope it's not infected or something.
What are you doing for it? Anything?
I'm sleeping on the other side when I go to sleep.
Are you putting like a antibiotic ointment or any of that stuff?
No, I might have to go to the hospital or the doctors, like the skin doctor or something, see if they can cut part of my ear off or something, like chop or reed, you know?
Well, if you're heading out of town, are you going to be able to do that before you go or...
No, I'm just going to tough it out like a real man.
You are a real man, I tell you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
But I just talked to the guy I know. We're supposed to have these two guys on today, two local hip-hop artists. Huh? One of them, who is the expert on the subject, backed out. The other guy is going to come on, and we're just going to go for it, see what happens.
Okay, all right. Did he say why he backed out? Is he afraid there'll be... retribution if he exposes stuff on him?
No, I think he just maybe he's a weird guy and maybe he
does he know who shot Tupac?
I'm sure they have an idea. I'm sure that was a big part of it. He sent me a really long outline of what they were going to do. I was really, really interested in it.
Uh-huh.
Can you hear noise in the background? For some reason Emily has her phone up like as loud as it can go. And I can hear everything she's saying, even with my headphones on, and she's upstairs.
Just the teensiest bit, but if you hadn't have said anything,
she did that last time, and it came through on the podcast. I was furious.
Oh.
But okay, so the other guy's going to come on. We're just going to go for it. But we've got some emails this week. And so... this one guy, Sean Hanna, sent us an email talking about his thoughts on homesteading, getting out of town with your family, finding some land, and it was really cool. He said my story kind of reminds him of his early story. This is driving me nuts. I'm sorry, guys. Okay. I gotta pause again and go yell at my wife. This episode is terrible so far. I'm sorry.
No.
Hopefully it quiets down up there. But yeah, this guy Sean said that they started, he lives, I think, in St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
The Kansas side, or not St. Louis, Kansas City on the Kansas side. Because, you know, Kansas City's in two states.
I did not realize that.
Yeah, Missouri and Kansas.
Huh. See, I'm learning stuff all the time.
Yeah, and so they started raising chickens and goats, I think, on their land. Like, Kansas City sounds weird because he said they're raising chickens at his house, and then they fell into a 35-acre property in city limits.
Whoa.
It's like there's no 35-acre properties here.
Jeez.
That you could raise animals on. And then he said they found 10 acres and moved out of the city. So they said they raise quails, which I want to do. I've heard Jack Spirko say that quail is the biggest moneymaker and easiest to get started on.
For their eggs?
Either eggs or meat. I'm not sure. Uh-huh. I think the meat. Uh-huh. Their eggs are tiny. I had a couple the other day that this girl gave me at the Sasquatch Freedom Festival. They're really small. They're good, but too small.
Did it taste like chicken eggs?
Yeah, it tastes a little bit better.
Oh.
And then some guy sent me a text about the Fauci rabbit hole. Norman did. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Jerome just sent me a text or an email about Freemasonry in San Francisco that he says was very relatable to our last episode. So I'm going to pass that along to Casey and I'm going to get into it too. So last night I woke up at like 4:00. I couldn't go back to sleep. And I was just looking on Instagram on my phone and like this website, you know how like sometimes they advertise on Instagram, some company that makes stickers popped up. So I clicked on it and I made 2 stickers for the show. And they're, if you want to look at what they are, guys, they're up on our Instagram. They're in production right now and they should be ready in like a week. And they're really cool. I'm really proud of them. I just made an account on Teespring, which is like this thing where you can make t-shirts. So I'm going to do some show t-shirts also. It's pretty cool. You don't have to like buy them, you know, you just make a design and then somebody orders them and then they print them out.
Yeah.
So you don't, it doesn't That's cost cool. any money and you just get the, like, you just pretty much have to pay for the shirt and then you can sell your shirts for as much as you want. And you keep the rest. So I'll probably sell shirts for $20. They say I should sell them for $25, but I'm a $20 shirt guy. I think $25 for a t-shirt is too much. You know, when I started going to punk rock shows, it was CDs were $10, shirts were $15. And I think that's how it was. Shirts might have been $10 too. And now it seems like they're $20 to $30, which seems like a lot for a shirt. But I don't think we got any significant donations since the last time, guys. But we got to go on Truthzilla 1-year anniversary last week. How'd you like that? That was pretty fun.
Yeah, I was really sorry I couldn't tune in earlier. Did Emily mention my day that day?
No.
That I started, you know, that path across the street from the Marin General Hospital, it's called Creekside, and you can walk it all the way down into Ross.
Yeah.
So, it's a nice walk. It's level. It's beautiful. And so my dog Cubby and I started out and we walked all the way into Ross and I bought myself a cup of coffee and walked back. And as I'm approaching my car, I'm doing, you know, this thing when you're looking for your keys.
Oh, no.
Gone. I have no idea how that could have happened. I mean, I have ear pods in when I'm walking, but that's kind of hard for a key to fall out of your pocket. I have no idea. So I can't get into my car, of course. And I called Eric and you know, asked him just to bring the spare key. And he says, oh, no, not just bring you the spare key. We are turning around and we are retracing your steps. So that's what we did. We walked.
Did you find them?
No.
Bummer. I lost my glasses one time while I was walking Wilma in San Francisco. And I like did the same thing. I had them like hanging out of my pocket, you know? I think it like started raining or something. I take my glasses off when it rains and I just like had one arm sticking down my pocket, you know, and the rest of the glasses hanging out, and I lost them.
Yeah. That happened to me once on a trail. And when I realized it, I turned around and, you know, retraced my steps, and somebody had put my glasses, because they were prescription, on a stump, you know, so I right That's there nice. So I could see them. Yeah, that was so nice. So I was hoping, you know, I was looking on top of all anything as I was walking, thinking maybe somebody just picked them up and stuck them up there. But
yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so it was fun going on Truth.
Yeah, it was really fun.
I talked for a little bit at the very, very end. There's some big names on there. It was fun. Dean was on there. Dean Reiner from Up Is Down, our friend from down the road.
Was that Dr. Dean?
Yeah.
Yeah, because his really picture wasn't up. Yeah. I know.
It was funny. At one point, there was like this doctor talking, a real doctor, and they were like talking about like what you do, what we can do to not get COVID. And then at some point, Dean just like interrupts. He's like, "Hey, is anybody like not scared at all of getting this? Like, why are we talking about what we should do to not get it? Is anybody not scared of getting it? I'm just living my life normally. Am I the only one doing that?" I was like, "Yeah, that's the pertinent point right here. You nailed it right on the head, Dean." So, but yeah, in other news, the house is getting cleaned out. I'm here in the podcast room. Look, none of my artwork's up anymore.
Yeah.
It's almost all the way empty in here.
Yeah, I can hear an echo.
Yeah, gonna take a couple loads today and over to the sword shed, and we're pretty much done. I gotta do a little bit of work in the yard to get the house ready.
Mm-hmm.
We're hitting the road Tuesday morning, heading east on Interstate 84 out of Oregon into Idaho. So if anybody knows of anything cool to do along the way, we've got some stuff mapped out. And yeah, if anybody lives out that way, hit me up. Somebody already hit me up in Montana. I want to go trout fishing. I don't know how to fish. And if somebody, it'd be really cool if I got to go fishing for trout in Idaho or Montana. I don't know if it's the right time of year for that. But yeah, going to get new tires on my truck today. I'm getting the oil changed, cleaning the house, and yeah.
Ready to go, ready to roll.
Found some cool properties online, and it's like I'll favorite them. I'll put a heart next to them to save them, and then I'll go back and look at them, and they'll all be pending. So everything's going fast. So it's good for our house, but bad for finding a place. But hopefully we'll be going far enough out of town that there's a little bit more leeway on being able to find a place. So guys, send us emails, send us money, send us crypto. And as soon as I get those stickers, I'll do something where I'll send you, give me just like a donation or something, I'll send you a couple out. And it's fun designing them. And I want to make some really cool Tartaria stuff. I asked Casey from last week. He knows a bunch of tattoo people, and he has all that like crazy art Tartaria stuff saved on his computer. So I said, if there's any like cool stuff that would look good on a shirt, send it my way and I'll make a shirt out of it.
Yeah.
So
does he have any Tartaria tattoos?
No, I don't. I don't know. I would love, if I had a room to get tattoos, I would do like a big Tartaria theme piece on myself. But all the real estate that I could do something big is gone. I got a little bit of room on my legs, but that's about it. So with that, guys, we will pause. Sorry about the interruptions early on. It's Deborah and her daughter's fault. Not mine. So We're going to pause again and let our guests in. We'll be back. All right, guys, we're back. And we're lucky enough, half our guests canceled, but the other one is toughing it out and showed up. And we're really looking forward to having him. It's going to be our friend Rhyme Wave coming at us from outside of Portland, Oregon. Out in the woods, though, right? In the countryside.
Yep, I just recently relocated to a farm out here. I was in Portland for a few years, and after the COVID lockdowns and the complete shutdown of the live music industry and all the events that were basically all the excitement in my life, I found an opportunity to move out here to a farm. So I've been out here about 4 months now, just playing in the dirt and growing some plants and loving it. It's been great.
That's nice. Awesome, man. I know the town that you're in. I'm not going to say it, but we're definitely looking at, I'm selling my house next week, and we're definitely looking at property down there. I think there's some farther you get out of town, close to where you are, the farther you get out on some of those country roads, it gets a little lawless out there. And that's what I'm looking for. I want to go to live in a place where I can have whatever I want on a couple acres. I like places where you can hear gunshots on the weekends and all that stuff. So
the Wild West.
I like it when you can hear people shooting targets on the weekends. And I lived in Oakland, California, so I used to hear gunshots on the weekends there too. And it wasn't too, that wasn't the best, but
yeah, there's a bit of that out here for sure. I haven't fully assimilated into the community. We've been basically just working every day on the farm, but yeah, I definitely dig being a little bit further out. I go from the city to the mountains to the city to the farm. Like I've lived in a lot of different places, and as I get older, I really feel drawn to being out in nature. And you know, the city's where we got community and culture, but if you got a car, you can still get there and explore that. But
yeah, there isn't even any more of that in the city anymore. You know, everything that you could get,
everything
that's beneficial about living in a city is gone now, you know? So especially like maybe not in the rest of the country, but where we are for sure.
Yeah, man, that's been pretty tough here in Portland, just cause I moved to Portland back in 2018, and I was just kind of blown away by the city and, you know, everything it had to offer for an artist, and, you know, just how many people my age, I'm 34, and there's a shit ton of adults that are still pursuing their passions in terms of art and willing to support each other and come out to shows. And I got linked up through like the open mic community, going to a bunch of open mics, just showing up, playing music, and have met some of the best friends of my life. And seeing that community shut down due to the COVID pandemic, if we can even call it a pandemic, has been pretty tough. And luckily I've still been able to find some opportunities to play. There's a little speakeasy in town that I play some shows at, and you know, I basically say yes to anything. So if you're gonna have a little camp out or birthday party, you want me to show up and play a set, just let me know. I'm just trying to spread the music in whatever way I can and keep the community alive.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's awesome. Yeah. So we met at the Sasquatch Freedom Festival about a month ago or something like that. And you did a set out there. It was awesome. I forget what you told me the name of that one song was, but you go hard on that one that you had just written, that you said you were a little nervous about doing in front of people that weren't as on board with all this stuff as at the Freedom Festival, you know?
Yeah. That song, the working title of that song is Cancel Me, kind of playing on the idea of cancel culture and, you know, how so many artists are walking on thin ice, you know, with what they say and trying not to offend anyone and trying to be really careful about being PC with their lyrics. And I feel that on some level. I've been doing this music thing for my whole life. I've been rapping for like 20 years now, and really putting it out there for like the last 10 years or so. And when you when you start to rap about controversial topics and especially things in the conspiracy realm, you get a little worried, you know, about what people might think. I mean, there have been rappers like B.O.B. I never really listened to the guy, but he came out as like a flat earther.
Yeah, he's a big flat earth guy.
And people just like instantly were all over him. Like, this dude's crazy. Like, I don't know what he's doing now, but it's funny because rappers can kind of like say whatever they want in terms of like violence or, you know,
misogyny,
all that shit.
Homophobia, but, anything, man. As long as, yeah.
It's like there's no limits when it comes to degrading our culture. But if you have any controversial views about, you know, politics or, you know, stuff like that, it's like a lot of these artists just get slandered for those views. So that song that you're talking about was me kind of like discussing, you know, what we've been experiencing over the last couple of years, last year and a half, I guess, and really just putting my thoughts out there. And, you know, it was a fun one to write, but it's kind of like a tough one to perform because, you know, that there's some people in the crowd listening that might not agree with you. I've got, you know, lines in the song where I talk about, you know, like, the mask mandates, you know, where's your line, basically, you know, what are you willing to do? You know, where do you draw the line? Talking about like natural herd immunity and how I don't necessarily think that's being discussed properly, talking about, you know,
or do you say, so there's something in there about UBI, I think too.
Yeah. It's, man, it's hard for me to put myself in the middle of the rhyme, but it's something like, you can't expect that UBI is not going to come with strings attached.
Yeah. I think that's the one. I was just walking around the campfire. I wasn't paying attention too much. And then I heard that. I was like, oh shit, man, this guy's going for it. So that was awesome, man.
I know we're going to get to this later, but there is somewhere we can hear your music.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I'm on all the streaming networks. Basically, wherever you listen to your music, you'll find me. I've been trying to kind of like stay off social media these days, just because it's like so toxic. But as an artist and musician, you kind of have to be on these networks at least a little bit, posting every once in a while. But yeah, I'm on like Spotify, iTunes, all that shit. So. But yeah, back to the UBI, like I honestly kind of was for UBI before COVID and before like the big stimulus program and the, you know, the trillions of dollars that we've been printing. But I think it's kind of been revealed to me over the last year and a half, just how the government wants us to become dependent on them. And with free money usually comes things that they're going to want from you. And whether or not that's just obedience of the rules or something like a vaccine mandate or something like that, my views on UBI have definitely changed quite a bit over the last year. Cause it sounds nice, you know, when you first hear about it, you're like, oh yeah, fuck yeah. Like just, yeah, send me some money and let me make art. But it's a lot's changed over the last year.
For yeah. Sure. It's not, hey, we're going to give you
$1,000
a month and you're still going to be able to do everything that you're doing now. It's going to be, we're going to give you $1,000 a month, some food vouchers that you can use where we tell you to use them. You can use your $1,000 debit card on Amazon, at Target, at Walmart. You can take it to McDonald's, you know, that's what it's going to be. So, and then if you don't do what we tell you to, we'll turn it off just until you get back on track and then we'll turn you back on. You know, it's going to be one of those type deals. I think, Joe Rogan, I know he had a bunch of guys on to, talk about it early on, like before any, you know, probably 4 or 5 years ago. He had that one celebrity chef guy, that Asian guy. I think is his last name.
Yeah.
Wang or something. H-U-A-N-G. He's one of those like tattoo chef guys that has like vice shows. had him on, and then he also had Andrew Yang on to talk about it and like how it would magically get paid for and all this stuff like that. And it's not just we're gonna give you money. So it sounds awesome. It's like, oh, I don't have to go to work. I can just go do jiu-jitsu every day, and all these other creative people can do art and pursue their dreams and start businesses. It's like, no, it's not like that, you know?
Yeah. And I honestly, I don't blame people for wanting it. And, you know, with the stimulus checks and everything, it's like, sure, send me money. You know, the government has taken so much from us over the years. Taxation is robbery. It's a fucked up system that, you know, we have to pay for and our kids are going to have to pay for. So at the end of the day, it's like, it's hard not to be for it, but you can just kind of see the writings on the wall. And, you know, ultimately, I'm the type of person that likes to work and likes to make money and likes to be able to, you know, enjoy all the fun things that money can provide in this life. But I don't necessarily know if I would, you know, hold everyone to the same level or expect people to continue producing, you know, something that's valuable for society if they were given the option to just sit at home and collect a check every month. But I do think that, you know, there's a side of it that could help a lot of people. I think the stimulus checks have helped a lot of people, but it's like, what's the cost? You know, like, how are we going to pay for this down the road? You know, are we just going to keep printing $3-4 trillion every few months until someone stops them? I mean, it's kind of like no end in sight at this point.
I think what was the last stimulus check? $1,400 or something like that. And it was what it cost every American, $5,700. So it's like, Sal the Agorist put out a meme. He's like, hey, I'm giving out stimulus checks. Send me $5,700 and I'll send you $1,400 back and we'll call it good. But so how did you get linked up with kind of the freedom community?
So before I go into that, I just wanted to say, like, I love this podcast. Deborah, you're fucking amazing. Adam, you're amazing. And like, this gives me a lot of hope. Stuff like this, just having open conversations. You know, it's beautiful to disagree with people. It's beautiful to question your beliefs. It's beautiful to be open, to things outside of your comfort zone. And I think more conversations like this need to happen and thankfully are happening, due to what's been going on in the world. And I just wanted to say that before we got too far that, it's like, that's it's really cool.
Thank you so much. It means a lot. It does.
Yeah. And people are resonating with it, you know, and it's like very brave of both of you to do this. And, all the love from over here and from the people that I know that I've showed the podcast to, everyone just thinks it's such a cool concept and it's hilarious. It's funny. It's like, you know, witty and inspirational in all the right ways. So keep it up, guys. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you, man. Yeah. So I met you at the Freedom Festival. Are you going to be at the one coming up?
I would love to. Yeah. Is that this fall?
It's like next week.
Oh, what? Shit.
There's another one next week?
You know, you got Scott from Truthzilla's info, right?
I did. Yeah. I still need to reach out to him.
Yeah. But, he's like the one doing it. And okay. It's where you live.
Oh, no way. All right. Yeah. I'll definitely.
It's on like a 50 acre ranch where you live.
Yeah. Let me check my calendar here. So next weekend, I actually have
the weekend of the 26th. So okay. 2 weeks.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I think I can do that.
It's multiple days. It's a camp out and stuff. So
nice.
Yeah. Yes, I don't know if we're going to be able to camp. We're going to go down in like at least for the day or something like that. So
yeah, as long as they don't have any like all night trance music, I'm there.
That
man.
Was so rough, man.
That was the first thing Adam said when I asked how was the festival.
Oh yeah. Man.
It was tough. So
I was camped literally right next to that stage the first night. I couldn't sleep. I didn't know that they're gonna be doing that. I was like, I found this sweet little campsite. I was like, oh, this is gonna be sweet. Put my earplugs in, like put my pillow over my head. I literally could not fall asleep all night long. I moved my tent like first thing the next morning. I was just like, I'm not letting this happen again. But yeah, that was a super fun gathering. I got linked up through that, through Mackenzie, who's been on your show before.
Yeah.
I met her at this place in town, one of the little speakeasy spots where we gather and share some music and art. And we just like instantly hit it off. Super cool chick. We're talking about cryptocurrency within the first like 5 minutes of like hanging out, and just started seeing her around at events. And she was a huge supporter of my music. She like, you know, definitely showed me lots of love for the stuff that I was putting out on the mic. And that was kind of how I found out about that. She told me about it and I was like, this sounds incredible. And that was actually kind of the first event that I had been to that was really focused on that specifically. I basically, you know, I didn't know exactly what to expect, and I was just really blown away by the diverse community, like, you know, kids, adults, like people of all ages kind of coming together to, you know, really try to figure out, you know, what to do. How do we band together? How do we, you know, come up with a plan to, you know, continue all the beautiful things that we have going in this world, and to not be restricted by some of these rules and regulations that have been imposed. And it definitely gave me a lot of hope. It was probably one of my favorite gatherings I've ever been to. And I've been to quite a few festivals and campouts and stuff like that. And this one was special in a lot of ways. And I made some really good connections. It was awesome meeting you, yeah. some of my other favorite podcast hosts from Truthzilla, and just met so many cool people there, and definitely look forward to more of that. And also just really cool having an audience that I felt like really resonated with my music. And you know, usually my music goes over pretty well. Like, most people dig it. I've had a lot of people be like, oh man, I hate rap music, but I love your shit. And that's always cool. But this was a little different in the sense that I felt like a lot of people there could really relate on a different level to some of the stuff in my songs. And also just a lot of the stuff I've been creating recently has been going a little bit more in depth into trying to dissect and examine what's happening in our world today. A lot of my music up until this last year or so has been very personal, has been more kind of like, you know, opening a page from the diary, you know, really trying to get into my mind and examine, you know, my thoughts and emotions and stuff like that, which is a wonderful side of music. And one of the cool things that you can do as a lyricist is just like examine your life. But lately I've been trying to examine the world in general and, you know, kind of dig into trying to figure out, you know, what's happening. And, yeah, so that's kind of my take on the gathering and why it was so exciting.
Yeah, it was, I definitely learned that there's a difference between a festival and a camp out. I think I'm more of a camp out guy than a festival guy, you know, but yeah, I had a really good time. And then Saturday night was great. Like, I met some people that I really, really clicked with. And like, a lot of people, I think, went down to the second rave, and like, it was just like the last few people hanging out around the campfire, just bullshitting and talking and having fun and just being normal, like laughing and just like, you know, it was a good time. And luckily this guy who had set up this gigantic tent like right by the big fire, by the campfire, he like left for the night and was like, this is my friend's tent, he's coming back to pick it up tomorrow, you guys nice. Can sleep in there if you want. And it was like, it was further away from the geodesic dome that had the drug-induced EDM dance party going on at it. So we slept pretty good the second night and were able to get out of there early. But yeah, it was really, really nice. Just, it's nice when we can get in these situations and just be normal. Nowadays, normal's like, just seems so foreign and weird, and like, it's going pretty well.
Yeah, man.
It's getting better. It's getting better and better here, you know, as far as like mask mandates go. Like I'm not wearing them anywhere, you know, and nobody's giving me a hassle. You know, I'm in Clackamas County, so I try to stay out of Portland as much as possible, but you know, so it's getting better. But yeah, I don't, we wanted to talk a little bit about hip hop today. We don't have to talk about the conspiracy stuff for hip hop. We'll save that for your buddy Hieroglyphs, which I think sounds like an awesome, awesome episode. I hope I can find somebody that can do the same for me with, I'm an old punk rocker, so I want to do it with that. Cause there's gotta be some of the same stuff in there, you know, in the '80s and all that stuff. But, what got your foot in the door with hip hop and rapping and stuff like that?
So, I've always been a music lover. When I was a kid, you know, music's been my life, like my whole life. I've just been obsessed with it. And, you know, when I was young, growing up in the '90s, it was basically just like whatever was on the radio, whatever was on MTV before the internet, you know, we didn't really have access to independent music. And, it wasn't easy to find, you know, especially as a kid. So I was definitely a product of that radio generation, watching, you know, Total Request Live and, you know, listening to the top 40 every Sunday and loved it, you know. And it was right around the time I started high school, I was introduced to underground hip hop. And underground hip hop is basically just kind of like a catch-all term for hip hop that is not mainstream. And a lot of these artists are talking about very different things, and they are not focusing on basically what you hear on the radio. And up until that point, I had enjoyed the radio hip hop, you know, I had enjoyed, you know, Jay-Z and Eminem and all these guys. I mean, how could you not like them as a kid? But I never saw it as something that I could do. I never thought of it as an accessible art form that I could participate in. I, you know, grew up in a middle class, you know, white family. Like I never saw myself as a rapper. That, you know, was not something that anyone ever told me that I could do, or, you know, was being shown to me in the culture as something that was accessible to me. But as soon as I heard underground hip hop, I realized that there was a completely other side of the art form. And, I just became obsessed with it. I started going to all the shows. I started, you know, trying to find as much different stuff as I could, you know, most of it from the United States, a lot of it from my hometown in Minnesota. But artists like, Atmosphere or Aesop Rock or Idea, Sage Francis, some of these were the artists that kind of like opened my eyes to the other side of hip hop. And I pretty much instantly started writing rhymes. I'd already been, you know, writing songs. I was into like punk rock. I was like trying to be Blink 182 for a while. But as soon as I heard hip hop, I was like, this is what I want to do, as soon as I heard the underground stuff. So that was back, like, you know, early 2000s, just kind of started writing rhymes. And for a while, I was honestly kind of afraid to like share it with people, you know, kind of afraid to see what people would say. And there's even a couple times in high school that, you know, people made fun of me for even, you know, trying to rap. But I just kind of stuck with it, and eventually linked up with other people, other like-minded artists that were kind of in a similar vein. And once I started putting it out there and actually performing for my friends and sharing my rhymes, I got some positive feedback, and that was fuel for the fire to know that I had something, and that the time that I was spending writing these rhymes was worth it. And I've just been chipping away, man. It's really just been the last few years that I feel like it's really kind of started to take off. And a lot of that has been just like developing more discipline around it, trying to, you know, chip away at specific goals, release music, connect with artists in the community, say yes to every opportunity to perform. stuff like that. But yeah, I've just been kind of blown away by how independent hip hop and underground hip hop has taken off now over the last few years. I think there's a lot of hope. I think that what I see now is a lot of people, more people than ever, listening to hip hop music. It's probably the most popular art form on the planet. I mean, if you look at the top 40 songs, most of them are hip hop. If you listen to the radio, you know, a lot of that is hip hop, but people that are really into the art form now have easier access than they've ever had to independent stuff that the algorithms haven't really been hijacked to censor yet. I mean, music and audio in general is one of the few things left that hasn't really been censored and is really hard for the algorithms to figure out, you know, how to hide certain things. So even though you'd never know it, if you watch the Grammys or the awards show and, you know, you still see kind of the same type of artists getting recognition in the art form, I think that this is as good of a time as it's ever been to be a conscious hip hop artist, and the audience is as big as it's ever been. And it's been really exciting seeing it break through and meeting other artists who are kind of on a similar tip. But yeah, my main goal with my music is really just to inspire people and to just, you know, show people their true power, to, you know, to raise the vibes in whatever way I can. I want to lift people up. I want to, you know, I want to bring that wave of optimism that I think is lacking in a lot of the mainstream music, and also kind of like inject a little bit of spirit into it, because I think a lot of hip hop music has kind of been robbed of its spirit. It's so focused on narcissism and greed and the ego and violence and materialism, capitalism. You know, it makes sense on some level because a lot of these artists come from nothing. But the way that a lot of young artists are kind of pigeonholed into thinking that if they don't talk about certain things, if they don't rap about certain things, then there's no chance of them making it big. And nowadays, every kid wants to be a rapper, and the rappers that they see on TV and hear on the radio are rapping about drugs and guns and violence, and, you know, the sexual exploitation of women in these videos is just insane. And, you know, I'm all about, you know, sexual freedom and, you know, sex sells. That's nothing new, but usually it has a little bit of nuance. And yeah, it kind of blows my mind how rappers are allowed to get away with anything, and how, you know, typically, especially in cancel culture, you know, you're seeing all these artists get canceled for like saying one little thing that offends somebody. But, you know, if you're a rapper,
that was 15 or 20 years ago too, you know.
Exactly.
Like, look what that guy said yesterday, you know.
Right. But if you're a rapper, like, it's all good. I mean, you've got rappers in prison who are celebrated for the crimes that they committed. You know, somebody like you know, Nicki Minaj, who admitted to, or was it Cardi B? I don't listen to either one, but yeah, I think it was like Cardi who admitted to drugging and robbing men she was a stripper, and, you know, didn't really catch much flack for that. I mean, Drake, who's been like caught, you know, trying to hit on teenage girls. You know, it's just, the list goes on and on of rappers that are doing things and celebrated and allowed to, you know, live their lives in ways that would typically get, you know, the average artist or the average entertainer would lose their credibility. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I think kind of reveals that there's a bit of an agenda to, the music that rises to the surface. And I don't necessarily blame the artist. I don't blame the rapper the same way I don't really blame people for believing what they're told on the news. It's like we live in a culture where the information is being so manipulated. And if you're an artist coming into hip hop, you're basically convinced that, you know, it's okay to to rap about these things. You know, it's actually supported and this is what people want. And, you know, it's okay to live that kind of life. And for people that do live that life, you know, for rappers that are actually in gangs, that are actually a part of this culture, I don't blame them for, you know, wanting to discuss it. You know, I wish they wouldn't kill people. I wish they wouldn't, you know, be so focused on money and stuff like that. But it's like, it's their slice of life. They're free to rap about how they're living. So I just want to make sure to say that, you know, I don't really blame the artists. I kind of blame the industry as a whole. And, at the end of the day, I think most of these artists come in with incredible talent that, you know, could go in so many different directions. And, you know, young kids coming in to the hip hop game, they have so much potential. And it's just, it's sad to see a lot of that potential squandered and, you know, shifted in a very particular direction that ultimately I think is kind of dumbing down our culture, which I have a big issue with, because I think we could do it another way.
Yeah. You're talking mumble rap, right?
Yeah. That's kind of like the ultimate dumbing down of our culture.
Deborah, are you familiar with mumble?
No, sorry.
It's
like a lot of people, like a lot of these young kids, and they take a lot of Xanax and then like mumble. The kids love it. Kids love it these days. I don't know. What's your explanation of it?
So I think to explain that, we got to back up a little bit. So like, you know, hip hop, when it first came out, was kind of like the ultimate way to wake people up. It was, you know, super socially conscious. It was poking holes in the mainstream narrative. You can pack so much punch into a song. The amount of lyrics that you can put into a hip hop song is insane. I mean, if you're trying to wake people up, if you're trying to spread a message, if you're trying to expose something, there's almost no better way to do it.
It's crazy because like originally when they started realizing they could market it, it was marketed to inner city blacks and white punk rockers.
Yeah. So, you know. I mean, historically, hip hop has this great potential. And so much of that is due to the fact that it's like lyrically driven and you can just put so much into a song. So like now fast forward to today with this mumble rap explosion. And the reason that I say that's kind of like the ultimate dumbing down of culture is you can't even understand what they're saying. It's taking an art form that is, you know, founded on, you know, lyrics and dumbing it down to a point where now you can't hear the lyrics. And rappers coming up now, they're trying to fit themselves in that box, trying to be successful in the hip hop game, are thinking that, well, now I need to slur my words and now I need to rap in a way where people they can't really understand what I'm saying. There's a lot of different artists in different veins of the mumble rap, but I just kind of think of it as that. It's like, you know, taking an art form that's based in lyrics and words and turning it into something where now you can't hear the words and it's all about the beats. It's all about the vibe, which is cool. I like beats. I like vibes. But where'd the message go? You know, like what are we listening to? You know, what are you trying to tell us? Like I can't understand what you're trying to tell me. People hate on it pretty hard and I laugh at that. I'm glad that, you know, there's enough people that kind of see through it. And once again, I don't necessarily blame the artist for following the trends. That's what a lot of artists do. But it's been pretty hilarious, man. Just seeing some of these artists come out, just like, man, this is what we got now.
Is there like anybody in your scene, what would we call it, like the conscious hip hop scene, or is that what you would describe what you're involved with?
You know, I like underground rap.
Okay.
People say conscious, yeah. I think we're all conscious at the end of the day. You know, it's like, it feels weird for me to say I'm conscious, because it's like, yeah, of course we all are. So yeah, that's what people say. So I'm like, I'm cool with that, but I'm trying to push back against the conscious rap title a little bit, because it just feels a little bit like, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Condescending.
Is there anybody amongst the underground rap scene that's in the mumble rap scene that's respected?
You know, there's so many diverse artists that kind of dabble in different styles from song to song. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are. I mean, there's like every day I discover like a new rapper that's amazing. I mean, there's so many that I haven't even heard of. So I can almost guarantee that there's like, you know, there's definitely a hybrid, and I'm interested to try to find more of those. And, you know, I'm always open to listening to anything at the end of the day.
Well, speaking of consciousness and what we can do to increase that, we thought we might touch on some of your experiences with hallucinogens. It's something that I'm interested in. I had a mushroom experience recently that didn't really reveal very much to me. Made me kind of feel like, oh, you didn't need to really do that. But what can you tell us about your thoughts on hallucinogens and what you're doing with it?
Yeah, so I have had some experiences. I think the plants are here to help us at the end of the day. And I mean, I would even put cannabis in that category. Cause some cannabis experiences can get extremely psychedelic, but I definitely have spent a decent amount of time partying over the years. I went to college at University of Wisconsin, Madison. It was a lot of binge drinking and, you know, other drugs that are not in the conscious realm, I'll say. And I just noticed that as soon as I started dabbling with psychedelics, particularly mushrooms and LSD, it really shifted the way that I thought about myself and thought about life. And I started to examine my own decisions. And it really was a long process. I mean, it's not like a magic pill where you do mushrooms once and you wake up the next day and you make all these changes in your life. But I just started to see how these substances are not recreational in the sense that others are. I think when you think about certain drugs like, you know, amphetamines, like cocaine, alcohol, they kind of feed the ego. They kind of feed like, that narcissistic side of us, that is self-serving. And, psychedelics to me really open you up and really kind of allow you to have more compassion for others, start to reflect on, you know, how the decisions you make affect others. They tend to, for me personally, make me want to be a better person and make me want to improve certain aspects of my life. They bring things to the surface that you kind of like know in the back of your mind that maybe you should be doing differently or should change. So I think they're extremely transformative tools that we're just kind of starting to scratch the surface of how we might be able to use them properly. And I kind of felt like I had a calling when I was younger. I don't know exactly why I became fascinated with mushrooms or decided, oh, I've got to do these. I mean, I think it might have had something to do with the music I was listening to, but I like to think that there might have been something calling out to me from the other side, and drawing me into this type of work. And now, you know, 20 years later, I use them much more sparingly and much more intentionally. So back in my 20s, it was like, you know, pop a tab of acid and go to a concert. Now it's like, you know, I'll microdose a lot of days, but in terms of like those bigger macro doses, I try to do that a lot more sparingly and actually try to integrate the experiences. So instead of just like doing it all the time, you know, doing it a little bit more in a calculated way. I sit in ayahuasca ceremonies about once a year, and that's been extremely beneficial in so many ways. The transformation that I've experienced from those is hard to put into words.
Have you been able to do that locally, or do you have to travel to the ayahuasca ceremony?
You can find them locally. It's a little bit hard. You have to know some people. I mean, technically, you can join certain groups, you know, Native American churches and stuff like that, that protect the sacrament. So it is protected work, but it's not easy to find locally. The first time I actually had to travel to Costa Rica, I just felt such a strong calling to do the work that I hopped on a plane by myself and went down to Costa Rica to do it. But since then, I've been able to find some groups that sit with the medicine in the area and have been lucky enough to get linked up with them. So I don't have to travel as much nowadays. And I am a member of a Native American group that has a protected sacrament, so I can do the work and not worry about, you know, prosecution and getting in trouble for that sort of thing. But to anyone who's thinking about doing this work, just be really wise about who you're sitting with. I mean, I tell people in a nutshell, it's like you're essentially opening up a portal to another dimension. And if the person who's opening that portal is not doing it in the right way, you can open it up to some pretty fucked up stuff. And there is a dark side to psychedelics. It's definitely not all, it's not all beautiful, you know, self-transformation. There's some people that work in the realms of like dark magic and can really do some harm if you're not working with the right person. So I don't think it's really fair to say that this is the right way to do a substance. Like, I think adults should be free to experience life and however they want. It's your body, your choice. If you want to cook it yourself in your kitchen and do it by yourself, it's not my role to tell you what you can't do or what you should do. But just beware, you know, that this is serious work and that we're working with other realms that, you know, other entities inhabit. And if you're not careful, doing that in an intentional way, respecting the medicine, respecting the plants, respecting the traditions, it can definitely do some harm. So I just kind of give that word of caution to people. It's an incredible tool, but you want to make sure that you're doing it in a way that is aligned with, you know, what feels right to you personally, and just make sure you're taking it seriously.
Who would you, if someone is new to psychedelics, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I've done mushrooms like over 100 times in my life. I've done it one time in a non-party setting, you know, so I wasn't using it properly. Had some weird stuff happen, but you know, it was always like a ton of alcohol involved. I remember I could drink like, I went to college at Chico State in California. Okay. It's a big party school too. And it's weird because you go to like all these different party colleges and they all have their own like beer, their own like proprietary beer that everybody drinks. What was it at University of Wisconsin?
Oh man.
What was the cheap beer there that everybody drank?
Natty, probably. Okay. Yeah. Natty. Like, we used to get beer 30. It was like 10 bucks for a 30 pack. It looked like grape soda.
Yeah. But, oh wow.
Yeah. Now if I'm going to drink beer, it's like only craft beer. Like I won't touch cheap beer, like for the life of me.
Ours was Keystone. Yeah. Keystone Ice.
Yeah.
And but I remember like one time I took a pretty enormous amount of mushrooms. That might have been LSD that time, I can't remember. But I've drank like 24 beers, you know, on psychedelics before, and like I think that probably clouds it up pretty well. And like, if someone has never had experiences with psychedelics, but they're interested in it, what would you recommend, or who's a good candidate for psychedelics?
Oh man, that's a tough question. Like who would I recommend, like that person researches or like learns from, or where would they go to find access, or
I guess who can I guess it's not a cut and dry question, but who do you think can benefit from using hallucinogens the most?
I would say people that are willing to make changes in their life. I think if you're not in a place where you're trying to improve yourself in some way, I mean, I think most people would say that they are, but it shows you some harsh truths a lot of times. Even cannabis, the reason a lot of people don't like smoking weed is because it kind of takes them deep into their mind, and they start thinking about some tough stuff, and you know, you get paranoid. So it's like, if you're not trying to do that kind of work, I would probably stay away. And also just ask yourself why you're not trying to do that kind of work. You know, like, what are you so afraid of in your mind? I mean, it's something that I've kind of had to just come to terms with. It's like, there's some dark shit in there. And if you're not willing to look at it, then, you know, what are you doing? Basically, are you just going to keep it all bottled up inside? Are you not willing to do this work? So I would say people that are trying to improve themselves, people that are trying to potentially heal from past trauma. I've had some experiences on ayahuasca in particular that kind of took me back to things that happened in my childhood, and kind of helped me understand why I am the way I am today. Nothing too fucked up, I mean, but without going into detail, it's like it can kind of explain a lot of things about you know, how you operate and why you think the way you think. And more than anything, I think it helps you appreciate the person you are and just kind of have some more love for yourself. So many people hate themselves and are not, you know, satisfied with what they're doing in this life and are just so hard on themselves. And that's one of the overwhelming messages I keep getting from psychedelics, is to just love yourself, you know, to just know that like, you're capable of anything and you're perfect, and doesn't mean you can't still make improvements and do some work. But I feel like I've been talking the whole time. Deborah, do you have any questions like for me, or I'd love to hear your take on things a little bit.
Well, my past with psychedelics was all recreational. I, you know, was in college in the 70s, and you know, it was, you know, I've never had an experience where it wasn't in a, you know, recreational, drink a whole bunch and take some drugs.
Did you ever have a bad trip on LSD?
I did.
Did you think that you were a banana?
No, I did not. I thought I was on a cattle car heading to Auschwitz.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. My husband and I were river rafting in Yosemite. And
you took acid on the raft?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus, Deborah.
And we get to the bottom, and you know, there's the old funky school bus that takes you back to where you start. And it was crowded. And I'm sitting around in my eyes, I'm sure we're like saucers. And I was like, Eric, I don't know what I said to him, but I told him what I was feeling. And we finally got, he protected me. We got off the bus, and then we went and stopped in one of the little camp stores to get something. And I'm kind of interested in serial killers. I know it's kind of weird, but there was a line in the little store to get what we needed. And I did one of those behind my shoulder. And I told Eric that Henry Lee Lucas was in line behind me.
Henry Lee Lucas, the guy that, which one was he?
When they found him, he had fingers in his pockets. He and Otis Toole were.
Oh yeah, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, but he's the guy that copped all those murders that he didn't really do.
Right.
Because he's like had like an IQ of like 60.
Yeah, he was not really fully fueled. But anyway, So, and that was the last time I had an experience.
What, and you've mentioned that you've had some experience with microdosing. What benefits can come from that, and what are some of the ways to do it safely?
Yeah, so microdosing, it's something I had heard a lot about and hadn't really tried too much. And it's funny that we're talking about like the recreational, you know, split, because I was microdosing recreationally for a while. Like, you know, once I got to a point where it's like, I don't want to do a bunch of mushrooms or a bunch of acid and like go out to a party, I'll just do a little bit. You know, so it was like I was doing this kind of like recreational microdosing, which I'm not trying to knock on. I mean, it can be a good way to stay a little bit more lucid and have a little bit more fun when you're going out. But more recently, I've been trying to, you know, microdose specifically for like creative benefits when I'm, you know, working on music or to, you know, when I'm performing. Sometimes I do like freestyle ciphers with friends where we're just freestyling, and sometimes a little microdose I've noticed can kind of like kick my mind into another gear for that. But also just like for day to day for work, it really boosts my energy quite a bit. I'm a pretty like energetic person, but like this current job that I'm working here on this farm is extremely physical, and it's probably the most physical job I've ever had in terms of the work that we're doing. So I've noticed even for that, it can like kind of help give me a little bit more energy during the day. And yeah, I think there's all sorts of benefits. You know, the microdosing phenomenon is kind of a weird one to me, because I'm for it in the sense that like I've noticed the benefits. I do it somewhat regularly. But on some level, I feel like it's kind of like skirting past the true potential of these substances. And it's also like using them to, you know, benefit yourself in this material world. You know, it's like you've got people in Silicon Valley that are like, oh, I'm gonna microdose so I can create, you know, so I can just code all night and make a bunch of money, you know. Yeah. Or like, so I think about that, how it's like, I like the microdosing. I think that it has a lot of potential in that sense. I'm a little bit more interested in like its potential to help people with like depression, anxiety, these types of things. Sometimes doing a full macro dose, like a full dose of a lot of these substances, is a little bit jarring for certain individuals. And it could be kind of like a good way to get somebody comfortable with these substances and kind of lead them towards a more transcendent experience that you can have. Because a lot of times with the macro doses, you're just like going inside your head, you know, you're laying down, you're not, you know, moving, and you're not going about your day. With microdosing, it's much more like you're going to take this, like you'd take a pill, like you'd take a supplement and then go about your day. So there's a few different ways to look at it, but I would recommend it, you know, to people that either like don't have experience with psychedelics, that are trying to just get a little bit more comfortable, people that are experiencing like daily depression, anxiety, you know, or people that are just maybe like really low on energy and are experiencing like brain fog and that sort of thing. I think it can kind of like beef up your body and your mind in interesting ways. But you gotta kind of do it in the right way. Like, I think psilocybin mushrooms are probably the easiest to microdose, because you can just take a little nibble and it's really easy to not like take too much. But an ideal microdose, you don't even really feel. It's subperceptual. So like, if you feel like really weird, then you've done too much. It's really just taking such a small amount that you're just introducing that substance to your body. You know, mushrooms in particular work in really interesting ways. I think Paul Stamens said that in order to get the benefits, the medicinal benefits of certain mushrooms, you only have to eat a very, very small amount. And those spores will just, you know, go to work in your system. So yeah, you can also microdose, you know, other things, but I would say, like, you know, psilocybin is probably like a good place to start if people are interested in that. And it's legal in a lot of places now, and it's I shouldn't say a lot of places, but it's becoming more accepted, and you know, it fucking grows in the ground. It's like, you know,
go find a cow pasture.
But
I guess the issue that it's not an issue that I have with it, but just one of the, I've kind of like asked a few different people, even on the show, like what is a good way to get started with it, and nobody has, like, there's no like set amount or anything. That everybody's kind of just says you kind of got to do like trial and error, like take enough to where you feel it and then like cut it back from there until you keep, like, little by little until you don't. Is that kind of your experience, or is there like a better way to figure out what, how much you should do and when and how often? And
yeah, there's definitely some people that are trying to figure that out. I mean, it's such a new phenomenon that it's like not really well researched, and you know, it's kind of like illegal to do the research in a lot of places. But there's definitely people that are trying to figure it out. Paul Stamens, who I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with, he's a mushroom guy who's been on Rogan. He's kind of like the main character in Fantastic Fungi, that mushroom documentary. He has a protocol where it's like psilocybin mixed with lion's mane, which is has like benefits for regenerating brain cells, and niacin, and he mixes those three together. In terms of the actual dosage and like how often, I think a lot of people are doing like a 10th of a gram if you were to actually like weigh it out on a scale. And in terms of how often, the overwhelming thing I've heard is like, don't do it every day, take breaks. You don't want to be microdosing every single day, particularly with LSD, but even with mushrooms. And James Fadiman is probably the most prominent psychedelic researcher who's trying to figure out how to microdose in the best way. And there's been some interesting research. There's actually a study that just came out that said that it's all placebo, you know, so it's like, at the end of the day, like, who fucking knows? You know, a lot of people say that they're experiencing benefits from this, but the placebo effects are real things. So it's like, we don't ultimately know. I feel like it's helped me on some level, but I'm just me, you know, I only know my own experience. But you are correct in that, you know, it's kind of like super loose in terms of like how to go about doing it. And I'm sure that does kind of like scare people away, because it's like, well, if this research hasn't been done, you know, people don't really know the best way to do it. You know, I don't want to.
Not FDA regulated.
No, it's definitely not. But yeah, I would say like, definitely don't do it every day. Take a very small amount, and maybe look up the Stamens protocol, James Fadiman. That could help.
Yeah, I have a friend, couple that we met in Freedom Cells up here in Portland. They're like the one group of people that we know, that actually escaped the city, got out, bought land, like quit their jobs, and are like actually doing it and like good for the rest of their lives. And so they're like, they like did what everybody's talking about wanting to do, you know?
Yeah.
And their house, and they had this like really awesome house in Southeast Portland with like a huge garden. Woman's like an amazing gardener. And, but she said, she started, microdosing kind of when I didn't expect it out of her, kind of when the lockdown started and stuff like that. And, it made it so that she could see things more clearly, and it made the decision that they needed to like leave like much, much clearer than she thinks. If they wouldn't have done it, she would have had like all this, she would have wanted to hang on to what she had materialistically more than like getting out of town, which would have benefited them spiritually. Wow. And she said it was, she's really happy she did it, but she said it was rough on her liver.
Interesting. Yeah. I've heard some stuff like that. It's, you know, I'm sure everyone's body's different. Everyone's body reacts in different ways. And, I mean, I just think about all the side effects of like pharmaceuticals and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like, if you really are experiencing a serious issue, you know, that a doctor would typically prescribe a pill for, it's like, you know, maybe roll the dice with something that grows in the ground and see if maybe that works. Or, you know, there's a lot of other things like meditation, exercise, healthy eating, you know, stuff like that, where, you know, I've found myself a lot of times just biohacking, trying to search for that, you know, thing that's going to kick it up to the next level. And like, I'm guilty. I'm always like trying, you know, new stuff. I just started taking C60, you know, and like shit like that. But
that's
it's
a
like
purple powder, the dude, one that Charlie Robinson's pushing.
Dude, it's the nectar of the gods, man. Really? It's insane. Oh man, I could go off on that. But the point I'm trying to make.
C60.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. It's expensive as hell, but it.
Charlie Robinson pushes it, Deborah. I think he's got a promo code. I'll find it out. I'll talk to him and see if he'll get it for you.
Okay.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is like, that's all good and great. And there's all sorts of things out there that can help, but sometimes it's like, it's actual work that we have to do, you know, whether that's like moving your body, being active, like taking the time to, you know, meditate. It's like, you can find these quick fixes like microdosing and it works, but at the end of the day, sometimes it's better to try to find a new discipline that's going to take you to the next level. And like, for me, music is that way in a lot of ways. I've often told people that when I'm making music, I kind of go into a flow state where like all the bullshit fades away. Like if I'm upset about something, if I'm like angry or like not feeling good, like once I get into that flow of actually making music, for that moment, all of that goes away. And that's therapy. I mean, that's cathartic. Like that's medicine right there. Just having a creative craft. My mom just started painting. My mom's like your age, Deborah, and she just started painting over the last 10 years. And she used to always tell me how I was so good at art and she could never do it. And now she's like taking painting classes and loving it. And I always tell people like, it's never too late to do any of these things. I mean, you just got to start and you don't even have to share it with anyone. You can just do it for yourself. You know, it's like, you don't have to get embarrassed. Like, oh, like I don't want people to see my art. I don't want people to hear my songs. It's like, they don't have to, just make it for yourself, you know, just for the cathartic release. So that's something I think I'd like to throw in there.
I think you should do jujitsu, dude, because everything I think you'd really benefit and enjoy it. Like from what I can tell by how much I know you and what you've been talking about, I think you'd really like it. And that flow state is what's achieved. And it's when I'm rolling jujitsu, it's the only time that there's nothing in my mind but what's going on, that I'm totally present, you know? So I used to get that a little bit when I rode dirt bikes too, but jujitsu is all there is when it's happening. So
I'd be super down to try that. If you want to shoot me some info.
We're busy right now moving. And when we get settled in, if we're down that way, I'll take you to 10th Planet in Portland. I think you'd enjoy it there too. It's like the stoner gym too. So
fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm into it, man.
Yeah.
But before we wrap, I got a question for you, man. What'd you think of that UFO that we saw up at the camp out? What's your take on that shit?
I don't know. It was weird. I'm not.
This is the first time hearing about this.
I'm not a UFO guy. I'm not aliens are from outer space guy, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, sorry if I wasn't supposed to mention it.
No. That's how much I care about that stuff. But it was strange. There was a UFO sighting, Deborah. It was very, very weird. I don't know. I've heard that there's all those satellites and stuff like that up in the air, and I think we saw those the first night that we were there. Somebody showed them to us. What did you take away from it?
Oh man, it was so wild. I definitely believe there's something up there. I mean, I don't know if what we saw was aliens or if it was some secret government technology, you know, but leading up to that, it was weird. I just got to share this. So like the whole weekend I'd been kind of seeing these like mysterious, like stars, orbs, like a lot, you know, times people would say they're satellites, you know, and I don't know how I feel about that, because a lot of these satellites move in weird ways, and I had been seeing them all weekend. And it was like, every time I looked up at night, I was like seeing some weird star doing some weird shit. And I had mentioned it to a couple people right before we saw that craft. There's like 20, 30 people around the campfire. And I had turned to my buddy that I was with, and I was just like, I don't know, man. I kind of feel like the aliens are like saying what's up. Like, I kind of feel like they're like letting us know they're out there, and like letting us know that they got our back, and they see what we're doing down here, and they, you know, that we have their support, and, you know, like being kind of like a, you know, a radical revolutionary gathering. Like, I was getting that vibe just in general as I was seeing these orbs. And then I turned to the people on the other side of me who I didn't know. And I just asked him, I was like, have you guys been seeing any like mysterious stars this weekend? And literally like a minute later, that shit flew overhead. And yeah, to me, that felt like some kind of like benevolent sighting where, you know, they were tapped into what was going on. And, you know, I didn't feel like I called it in personally, but it felt like I got some kind of a premonition leading up to that. Other people were saying the same thing, that they had, you know, had these like premonitions that we were going to have a sighting. There was like this kind of like sacred drum circle happening at the time. I mean, if it felt legit, but at the same time, I'm a super skeptic, and it's like, that could have easily been anything. But it was pretty dope. I've been trying to manifest a UFO sighting for like the last 10 years. And that was like, that was pretty epic. I mean, maybe I don't know what it was,
but doing it with enough people, and this is, you had enough energy at that gathering to make it happen, you know?
I guess so, man. The funniest thing is when I tell people about it, because I'm like pretty excited, you know, I'm like, holy shit, I saw a UFO this weekend. Everybody I tell is like, are you sure it wasn't Starlink? Are you sure it wasn't Elon? I'm just like, no, dude, like Elon. Not every time we see something crazy in the sky, it's not Elon Musk. Like, yeah, sure, like he's doing some shit up there. But I just think it's funny how now anytime anyone sees anything questionable in the sky, oh, it's Elon. It's just Starlink. Don't worry about that. They're just, you know, they're just doing their thing over there. But
can you briefly describe what you saw?
Kind of looked like a submarine in the sky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lit up.
There was like no like outline to it, but the lights kind of formed like a hot dog shape to me, is kind of what I saw it as.
Kind of like a blimp.
But yeah. There was like no like outline that you could see of it. It was weird.
Huh. Yeah, it was, to me, it looked like almost like a little mini caterpillar in the sky. Yeah. It was like hundreds of little lights. And it was flying very slow. It was really hard to tell how far away it was. It was kind of like, it looked like it could have been like 1,000 feet up, or it looked like maybe it could have been like a mile up. I mean, it was very hard to get that kind of perspective, but it seemed pretty close. And it was traveling very slowly, just like right across where we were. And as
how
it got-
How did it disappear from the sky? How did it go away? It just disappeared.
It didn't disappear. I watched it the whole way, and it, like, as it got further away, you could kind of see like a circular shape. Cause like right when it was in front of us, you just saw kind of like a big streak of lights. And then as it got further away, I could kind of see like curvature to it, okay. But and that's the one thing too, that makes me kind of think maybe it was just some like, you know, black ops military craft, because it didn't really do anything that defied the laws of physics. You know, it didn't like pop from here to there or disappear or like, you know, fly away at supersonic speeds. Like it was just kind of like floating across the sky. But either way, it was pretty cool.
The feds taking down everybody's license plate number that was there.
Exactly. Scanning all of our phones from above. But yeah, sorry, I just had to like touch on that.
No, man, I'd forgotten about that. It was weird because that's like kind of the only experience like that I've ever had before. So
yeah, it was pretty cool. Hopefully we'll get another one at some point.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, this has been fun. I'm glad you came on. I'm glad we got to make it work. but I'm really looking forward to you guys coming back on again. So we got to get that straightened out, and
for sure,
we'll do for it sure. for sure. But why don't you go ahead and tell everybody how they can find you and support you, and you know, what do you want to push?
Just check out my music if you got a second. Wherever you listen to your music, you'll find me there. Just type in Rhyme Wave and check out my songs. I got a new album coming out this year that I've been working hard on, bunch of collaborations with other artists, and yeah, just check out my music. If you're on like Instagram, I'm on there, Rhyme Wave Hip Hop. That's probably like the best place to find out if you're in the Portland area about shows that I'm playing. But yeah, come out to a show, say what's up, and support living artists. One of my friends says that it's you know, the dead ones don't really need your support. It's great to listen to the ones that have passed, but support living artists, support your friends that make art, and make some art yourself. You know, I think everybody has something to share. Everyone's here for a reason and has a, you know, particular way that they can change the world. And I'm just trying to do my part through hip hop and conversations like this, and super thankful that you guys had me on, and look forward to hopefully chatting again, getting more in depth about the hip hop conspiracies with my buddy.
Yeah, I can't wait. But yeah, I'm really happy we got to talk, and I'm glad that I'm glad we know you. I hope we get to see you soon. Hit me up with your email, or hit me up with your phone number and an email, man. We'll connect that way.
Awesome. Sounds good. But
yeah, thanks for everything, man. And we'll check out, everybody check them out.
Yeah,
and
really. Thank you.
We will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much. Okay. Good luck with the move. Peace out, guys.
Bye.
Bye.